Today on The Grave Talks, the ghosts of Mackinac Island. Mackinac Island, to me, is one of the most intriguing places I have ever visited. Even as a child, something drew me to the island and called me back time and time again. I wouldn't say it was paranormal, per se, but there was definitely something about it that I could not put my finger on. Located between the upper and lower peninsula of Michigan, Mackinac Island is a tourist hotspot in the summer seasons. In winter, it could very well be the setting for a horror movie like The Shining, as the population drops off to locals only, with the only way to access the island being a once-daily ice-breaking ferry or helicopter. The massive resorts, such as the Grand Hotel, sit empty in those months, with only maintenance and caretakers roaming the halls during their work. Or could there be others still on the island? Not so living people still walking the halls of these historic resorts and homesteads. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we hear several ghost stories about the island, yet we are just touching the surface of one of the most haunted islands in the world, one which we will surely come back to with more episodes in the future. Today on The Grave Talks, the ghosts of Mackinac Island. Todd Clements is the paranormal investigator of the island, and he'll be sharing his stories with us today.
I thought I knew all the stories about Mackinac's origin stories, and lo and behold, you always find something new. There's a story, they don't know what year it was, but it was a chief of, I believe it was Ojibwa, an Ojibwa chief, or he was pretty high up. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, he was very old, and he told the story of how Michilimackinac Mackinac actually got its name. And he said that years and years and years and years and years ago, he didn't give a date, that there was a small tribe on the island, living on the island, and there was other tribes in the area, Huron, Chippewa, different tribes, and they went on a war party somewhere near the border of the Upper Peninsula in Wisconsin. They left behind this tribe, which couldn't defend itself. It was a very peaceful tribe. And the Iroquois nation came and wiped them out on the island. Two survived, hid, and when they thought the coast was clear, they went over the ice to the mainland and disappeared. Now, when they went over the ice, they walked backwards for close to 5 miles so that if they saw their tracks, they would think they were going to the island instead of running away from the island. The name of the tribe was Michilimackinago. Sounds kind of like Michilimackinac. So I think that could possibly be the real story, but the guy's been gone for 120 plus years. I'm not going to be able to talk to him unless I can catch him as a ghost, maybe, if I'm lucky, but I don't think that's going to happen. For thousands of years, it was Native American sacred land. They weren't supposed to fight there. They were there to negotiate, trade. It was a peaceful place. They would bury their chiefs, their medicine men. They'd bury the higher-ups in their tribe there. And it was kind of like Hollywood. Once Hollywood does it, the chiefs and the higher-ups, everybody else wants to do that. So everybody started getting buried on Mackinac Island. And the rule of thumb is if you can dig deep enough to bury a body, it's already taken. And almost every summer, somebody unearths bones somewhere. Mostly Native American. Occasionally you'll find a European settler, but you can't tell what nationality. They've never done like DNA testing or anything like that. Just recently they built a new hotel right downtown. And the house that used to be there had been there for 140, 150 years. And it was really not salvageable. It was falling apart, and fixing it would replace more than it would be original, so they just wound up tearing it down. But the original house didn't have a basement, had a crawl space, and the hotel was putting a basement in. So they dug the basement out. They found a roughly 24 sets of human remains in the foundation of the basement. Half were European, which is a cemetery that was kitty corner. They moved through the dirt. The bones moved through the dirt over hundreds of years since the cemetery closed about almost 200 years ago. That was kitty corner to it. And they moved the bodies, poltergeist. But they didn't move all of them, and we already knew four of them that didn't get moved. And they found some Native American bones. The Native American bones have still not been claimed, even though the police have contacted the tribe in Sault Ste. Marie and said, hey, we've got somebody. We don't know who, we don't know where they're from, but they're here. And they're still at the police station in a big, big box. The truth is stranger than fiction on that island so many times over. It's amazing. And nobody ever wanted to talk about it until I started poking my nose around it. Then the people who do want to talk about it are like, you didn't hear that from me.
Take us to the more modern version of the island, and that's kind of an oxymoron, but take us to the 1800s, the 1900s, when the island began to get settled a little bit more, the town started to spring up. How did that all begin, and why?
Well, originally it was Father Jacques Marquette who came to the island as a missionary. Obviously, back then, they thought Native Americans were savages, and they needed to follow God, and he worked at converting them to Christianity. And he was peaceful. He never had any real trouble with them on the island, and that was pretty much the foothold of Europeans on the island. That was where it really got started. And then you started getting French and English and Americans. I mean, it just started building and building. The reason it was such a great location, one is a high bluff where eventually in the 1780s, late 1770s, the British built a fort. It was very hard to get to, it was easy to defend. So they built the fort. The island was a strategic military location because it was an island. It's where Lake Huron, Lake Michigan meet, and it's not super far away from where the river comes down from Lake Superior. So it was a great trade route. It was also a good military place because you could bring ships in and out and supplies and weaponry. So it became a fort and a fur trading hotspot. It was one of the biggest fur trading spots in the United States because it was easy to get the furs there, and the trappers were all in the Upper Peninsula, Canada, all the areas surrounding there. They would bring their loads to the island, and actually furs were currency at one time in the island. You could use beaver pelts and mink pelts and all that, and they all had different values, and you could use them for money on the island at one time. The Astor family, and he's famous, obviously Titanic, all that. Yes, it's one of his great-great-grandfather was established Astor Fur Trading Company. I believe it was called the Northwest Fur Trading Company on the island. Made millions of dollars on fur trading. There were other fur traders there, too. And the island became Wild West town without gunslingers and fur traders. They had fur traders instead. But they weren't looking for gold. They were looking for fur. And at the time, everyone wore hats, and they were made of fur, beaver pelts and things like that. And everybody, you didn't have winter coats like you do today, so people wore furs to stay warm in the winter. So it was huge, huge business. And that is where it really got going financially and establishing, obviously, a city around the fur trade with restaurants and hotels and everything like that for people to stay at when they come to the island. And the fur trade started dying out in, I believe, somewhere around 1880s. And at that time, there was a national park. The fort was used as a national park. It was demilitarized in the late 1880s. And they were like, okay, so fur's going out. The military doesn't need it because we're not at war with the British or the French. And, okay, what can we do? How about tourism? Okay, let's try tourism. And tourism has been there since then.
The island sits between the upper and lower peninsulas of Michigan, and off of the island you can see the Mighty Mac, the giant Mackinac Bridge, which is just sight to see in itself, and quite a beautiful thing to see the sun setting right behind it in the evening hours. But getting to the island, only certain months of the year is really a feasible thing. Winter is very harsh up there. And when you get onto the island, you notice the architecture and the size of some of the buildings, especially the Grand Hotel, a massive hotel on the side of the island. How did they go about building such a grand structure so long ago with the means that they had on this island?
It was built by a steamship company and a rail line company deliberately to give them a place to take people and get their money, more or less. It was a beautiful place. It was known for being healthy, cooler in the summer, clean air. And these two companies built Grand Hotel to bring tourists to. And people didn't take 1-2 week long weekends. They would stay for months at a time. A month vacation was considered a normal vacation at Grand Hotel back then. Some people would stay up there the entire summer. And they pretty much were the ones who launched massive tourism on the island. There were other hotels. There's older hotels on the island to this day. Lakeview Hotel was built in the 1850s, I believe. The Island House Hotel was built in 1852. These are pre-Civil War hotels, and they're still being used as hotels to this day. Then a bunch of other hotels started popping up. There was one called Mission House Hotel. That was actually built originally as a school, a missionary school, where Reverend Ferry, who ran it, would take children who were half Native American, half British, half French, half American, and educate them in the ways of proper society, and basically take the Native American savageness, at the time they called it, out of them and make them parts of society that they could be proud of. That hotel opened in the 1830s and stayed open for 100 years and closed around the Great Depression in the United States. So that gives you an idea. It was open for 100 years and it closed after 100 years of business at the Great Depression, which was 100 years ago to now. So
the construction of the Grand is quite a story, though.
Yep. Built out of white pine. It was all brought across the lake on the ice over the water, and they built it in just a few years. If you've ever been there, if you've ever seen a picture of it, it's a massive hotel. It is a huge hotel, and they did it in just a few years, and because money speaks, and the faster you get that hotel open, the faster you get people in it. So they built it very well. Obviously, it's still standing today, and it's in pristine condition to this day. And over the years, they did little expansions here and there, and they redid certain things. But the funny thing is everybody who worked there, unless they were, like, really high up in management or ownership, they're only there for about 5 to 6 months a year, and they're gone. So the United Island to this day, it's a migrant workforce just in season from early May or late April to late October, early November. And then most of the people who work on that island aren't just gone. They go all over the world. They're from everywhere. So there's a lot of housing. Some of the old hotels are housing now. They built housing for people. There's roughly 3,000 to 4,000 people who need housing to work there in the summer.
There are many ghost stories, and there's many accusations of ghosts around the island at many, many locations, especially at some of the more famous locations. But the thing is, many of the stories seem to be just that, tales, not necessarily true accounts. What are we aware of that's out there for being documented true accounts at a place such as the Grand?
There's a lot of stories out there. There's a lot of stories that I get sit there, look at, scratch my head. I go, where'd they get that one? Because that doesn't make any sense at all. I hear stories about ghosts all the time up there. I've been doing this since I was a little kid. My interest in paranormal and everything. So it's been a long time, and I know what's a long tail and what's kind of got, okay, maybe you got something there. There's something unusual, and it fits the history. But typically, the Grand Hotel does not like to talk about their ghosts, and their employees aren't allowed to do it. But I have friends at the Grand Hotel who are willing to talk about it. I've talked to numerous tourists who've had experiences at the Grand Hotel. And back about 100 years, maybe 80 years ago, they would talk, whoever was running it at the time, and I don't recall who it was running at the time, they used to publish a, like, Grand Hotel magazine for the people who were staying at the resort. And that was the only place I've ever seen the actual hotel come out publicly and say, we have a ghost story, officially. That one is known as the Woman in Black. And the story behind her is it was roughly around time of Titanic, 19 teens. A woman shows up. She has guys, footmen, which are the guys who would carry your bags and take care of everything. She had assistants. She had everything. She had two very large Afghan hounds. And she was dressed completely in black. And she had a veil over her face. You couldn't see her face in black. Checks into the Grand Hotel. Goes to one of the best rooms in the hotel, never leaves that room except to walk her dogs two or three times a day on the front porch, let them do their business on the front porch, and then goes back to her room. When she checked out, nobody saw her leave, just her servants did all the paperwork and checked her out and everything, and she was gone. And the legend of it is that when she left, a black raven landed on the windowsill of the bedroom she slept in and stayed there for 3 days. Strange. But people have reported, and I haven't heard any reports within the past few years, of a woman walking two large dogs on the porch. And if you've ever seen the porch, it's 660 feet long. You stand at one end and you can see a little bit of a person at the other end. It's a pretty big porch. It's actually the biggest porch, I think, in the world. And you'll see a woman walking two large dogs, but if she's walking towards you, she never gets to you. She vanishes before she gets to you. Some people have reported seeing her from the dining room, which is right on the porch. They'll look out the window and they'll see a woman undressed in black with two large dogs walking down the porch. And they're just like, that's weird. So,
is there any documentation as to who she was or may have been?
We have no idea who she was. Some people think she was an actress from New York. Some people said she was a wealthy wife from some sort of lumber baron or something along those lines, a widow, and she's dressed in black. No one's really sure, and I've asked people at the hotel if they could find out. They're like, no, there's no way we would be able to find that. The records might exist, but they wouldn't even know where to start, especially if she came in under an assumed name. They would never know which one it was, or they couldn't find out who she was. That's the only report that they ever released that was officially Grand Hotel related. And all the other ones are hearsay and what people have said and reported and everything like that. There was a little girl that, I think it was the 50s, might have been the early 60s. She was in a higher room and she was sitting against the window and the screen popped out. She fell, she died. Her ghost is known to haunt. She's a little girl. She's playful. Everybody calls her Rebecca. And I actually have talked to kids. She appears to kids more than she does to adults. I've talked to kids, and when kids tell you the story, they do it with all their enthusiasm, and, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm telling this. You're going to think I'm crazy. The mom's pushing, tell him. He's the guy who knows about the ghost stories up here. Tell him what you saw. And one kid came to me, and he said he's walking down the hallway towards his room, and a little girl was near the door of his room, and she had a big colorful ball. And she looked at him, waved, and then rolled the ball towards him, and he watched the ball come towards him, and he was watching it. He went down to grab it, and went to grab it. It wasn't there. He looks up. The girl's gone. There's nobody there. He's like, I know she was there. She was there. I know it. And so I assume that was the Rebecca that people have talked about seeing in there. They have a kids club area. They named it, I think it's called Rebecca's Kids Club or something like that. And I don't think it's named after her, but I just thought it was kind of funny, the coincidence. The name is the same as the little girl. Other people have heard the jingling of keys in hallways, especially in the winter. Some of the people who work on the place say they hear it sounds like a security guard belt jingling keys, walking through hallways when they know no one's there. Phones ringing in the middle of the winter when the phone lines are shut down. I mean, there's logical, possible answers to what could be doing it. I mean, it could be a surge in the line caused the phone to ring, electrical. I don't know. But another one that I've actually heard from several guests is you don't see anything. It's all auditory. You hear the whole experience. Staying in rooms above the dining room, occasionally in the middle of the night, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, you start hearing the clatter and chatter, big band music playing down below in the dining room. And one person said they even went down to the floor, put their ear on the floor, and it was clear as a bell. They could hear this happening, and they said it wasn't pipes, it wasn't anything like that. It was literally, you could hear people talking, you could hear horns, you could hear clanging of plates, and they called down to the front desk and said, what in the world's going on down in the dining room? This is really loud. It's keeping us awake. And they're like, the dining room's empty. He didn't believe him, so he went down. He got dressed and went down and looked into the dining room. And you look through the glass doors, and it was lights out and empty. And there was nothing in there. So that's one I've actually heard from 4 guests that have come to me to tell me about that. Strange residual sound of a huge party in the dining room.
In the dining room, if you've ever been there or seen it, the best way I can describe it is as if you're walking into the Titanic's first class dining room.
Everything is like, it's got that original old feel to it. Pillars and the wallpaper and the carpet and the fine china that you eat off of. And the waiters eat, I mean, they take the maitre d', they may, if you don't put your napkin on your lap, they will do it for you. It's literally like you've gone to another century, another time. And you have to dress up to eat dinner there. And
it is an experience, probably one of the few that you truly can feel like you're going back in time and not feel like it's a production. It truly does feel like you are going back in time there. There's another resort, a smaller hotel, deep within the island. Takes a little carriage ride to get out to it. Lots of history there as well. History, which also seems to be fairly haunted.
Yep. I know a few people out there for sure. I know some of the higher people up there. The owner is kind of, he's afraid he'll scare people away, so he doesn't want to really talk about it. But they'll talk about it as long as you don't. We almost got an episode of Ghost Hunters there. We were talking with them, their production company, and they said, you know what, this says too many people are going to see this, it's going to scare customers away. They're wrong. They didn't know that, but they were wrong. We have tons of stories from Stonecliff. The oldest known ghost to haunt, it's kind of a legend, but the legend does follow. I've gone back and look to see, is it possible that this could have happened? And I did find it long before it was even built. And the British were holding Mackinac Island at the time. It was British territory. There was a soldier that would go out on watch. And we found on an old map a salt box right on the property, which is basically a supply box where if you're out on watch, that's where you'd have your food, your ammunition, everything you need to survive for a week or 3 days or however long your watch was. And there was one there. And there was also a story of a Native American woman who fell in love with a British soldier and was forbidden. That was forbidden for a very long time back then. You weren't supposed to be in relationships with the Native Americans. Well, they fell in love, and where they met, every time he was on watch out there, that's where they would meet and talk, and that's where they fell in love. And he was going to go AWOL to leave with her, and that was basically the story. Was they planned a night. He was going to be on watch, and the two of them were going to get a boat and get off the island and disappear. together because they knew they could never publicly be in a relationship with him being in the military and everything along those lines. So she showed up and he never, ever was to be found. He disappeared. He was gone. She didn't know what happened to him. He talked to some of his other friends at the fort and mentioned his plans, and it got to his superiors, and they arrested him, court-martialed him, and imprisoned him for planning to go AWOL, especially for the fact he was going to go AWOL with a Native American woman. So he never showed up. She stayed there. The legend goes she stayed there for weeks. I don't know if she actually stayed there for weeks, but eventually, somehow, she passed away. They say it was a broken heart. And they say that they were going to get married, and she never was given her chance to get married to the man that she loved. And her ghost to this day needs to be appeased if you're getting married, which is a popular place on the island to get married. If you insult her, she will try to ruin your wedding. And the funny thing is, that's a legend, but I've seen and heard stories of things with weddings at that hotel where somebody may have done something to offend her, and things happen. There's one, I was talking to a guy who works in the kitchen. They were bringing a wedding cake, $2,000 wedding cake, out on a tray to where the wedding was. And something hit the wedding cake, the tray the wedding cake was on. The wedding cake flew off the tray and was destroyed. So he looked around. He was like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? There was nothing at all that could have stopped that tray on that cart from moving. Something, he said it felt like somebody kicked it, like hard from the front, and everything slid off the cart. So that's one story of somebody. Another one where she's helpful, the mother of the groom was about to miss the wedding. She went upstairs after the wedding, she was going to miss the wedding. She went hiking in the morning. And she went back to her room to take a nap before the wedding. She fell asleep. Her alarm clock didn't go off. And she told me someone slapped her on the face so hard it left a red mark of a handprint. And she was the only one in the room, but she woke up and made it to the wedding. There's a handful of stories that had to do with weddings. One, a bride heard the story and she was like, oh, and she was insulting, just joking. And she tripped down a staircase and twisted her ankle. So it's kind of like that break a mirror, 7 years bad luck type. You don't want to make the ghost who never had a chance to get married upset because you're going to get married, and don't make her mad.
But that's not the only ghost haunting the grounds of this resort.
The other one was come back up to about in the 1920s. The family was the Code family. I could be butchering the name because no one's ever been able to tell me the correct way to say it. I've heard it a million different ways. They were a very wealthy family out of Chicago. If you've heard of Armor Hot Dogs, Armor Meat Company, they were one of the original families that were involved with founding that meat packing company. They were very wealthy. And the main manor, which is a mansion by all sorts. I mean, if you've seen it, it's a mansion. It's huge. It's gothic. It's beautiful. That was their summer cottage. They built that as a summer cottage to get away in the summer. They built the house. They stayed there. There was a huge story. I'm not going to go into that story, but one of their kids was kidnapped and ransomed. And there's all kinds of things, and they just stopped going there. But while they were there, they had a full lineup of servants, chefs, housekeepers. They had everything. One of the housekeepers, we don't know why she did it, but we do know for a fact she did do it, went into, there used to be an apple orchard on the land, and there's still a few apple trees there, but they're just sparse now. There's only like maybe 8 left. She went into the apple orchard with a shotgun. She walked back there with a shotgun and took a shot to her head, and she killed herself. We don't know exactly why she did it, but she shot herself in the head, and people tend to smell apple blossoms in the area that she did it. And people have seen furniture move, wisps of cold air going by them unexplainably. There's just a bunch of different strange paranormal things going on. the sinks will turn on and off. One of the bathtubs turned itself on and overflowed. Beds will move against the doors to the rooms occasionally. I mean, it's definitely paranormal. I don't know what's causing it. And a lot of people think it was the servant that shot herself. It's still haunting it. She's also known as the Patchwork Woman because the dress she typically wears looks like it was sewn together with a bunch of different fabric. People have seen her walking the grounds. One maintenance man had probably one of the best sightings of her ever. He was going through the house. She was in the house, and there was someone kneeling, stooping down in front of a fireplace that wasn't lit, acting like they were trying to warm themselves up. They were cold. Patchwork dress. And he said, he approached her, he said, "Can I help you?" She goes, I'm so cold. And then she vanished. So that was one of the best sightings at that resort of an actual, like, apparition.
Where everyone seems to go on the island, almost any building, almost any park, almost any plot of land, there seems to be a ghost story associated with it.
Well, this isn't a ghost story, but it's definitely paranormal. This happened to me about a year ago, and I've heard the stories from locals, from police officers, from tourists, and I kind of was just like, tongue-in-cheek, it's fairies. If you think about a fairy, a Tinkerbell, a fairy, that the island has fairies. And I did my research on it, and I've heard all the stories about fairies on the island. It was once called the Fairy Isle. And there's a lot of legend that they live in the cracks and crevices, and they've left the island years ago because man became corrupted and we weren't pure anymore. There's tons of, like, legends on the fairies on the island. And about a year and a half ago, give or take, I was walking home. I live way up in the woods in the dark at night, so nobody around. It was late in the season. I'm walking up, not too far from Grand Hotel, but all the cottages were closed down, boarded up. Everybody is done for the season. And I'm walking past this huge, like, garden. And on one side there's a garden, the other side there's a bluff, maybe a 100-foot drop, and then there's the lake. It would be the Straits of Mackinac. I'm walking, and I see a flash of light out of the corner of my eye on my right-hand side. I look over, I don't see anything. I'm like, okay, strange, whatever, lightning bug, you know, who knows. Walk maybe 5 more feet, and this light, 20 feet to my right, is as bright as a flashlight, brighter than a flashlight. And it zooms in front of my face, maybe 3 feet in front of my face, and then goes through the air, out over the water until I can't see it anymore. It's about a little bit bigger than a softball, very bright white-yellow light. And I do not know what it was, but everyone I've talked to since I've seen this are like, oh, you saw one. That's the one. That's the fairy. Those are the fairies. That's what you saw. What they are, I don't know. Will-o-wisp. There's so many names for them. Some of them, I believe, are definitely natural occurrence. This thing wasn't natural. It moved 80 miles an hour. It was too big for a bird. It was too big for a bat. It was too bright, too big for a self-illuminated animal. Like a lightning bug or anything. Like, lightning bugs don't move that fast and they aren't that big. So I don't know what it was that I saw. I've seen a couple other things that I wasn't sure because I saw it so quickly. But that one, I saw it. It was right in front of me. And I know it sounds crazy. I still can't believe what I saw, but I saw this light and it was like intelligent. I don't know how to explain it.
Of course, the term orb, a fairly overused term and often very easily explained away by light refractions, but it's almost like in real time you saw an orb without the lens of a camera or anything of that nature.
I know there's people who still think orbs are something. There might be a few that are, but most of them, it's just the camera playing a trick on your eye with dust, water, particles. But this thing was amazing. I'm not going to lie, it was amazing. And actually, I've been doing a lot more research into this now because I've actually seen it. And I know what it is, and I'm trying to find out, okay, so I hear people talking about these things in the woods all the time. Maybe I'm going to start going and doing investigations for these and see if I can't get something more from that. So I'm going to try and look into those more.
The island overall, I would describe as a fairly happy place, at least to me. I've always felt very comfortable, very happy there. But is there anything on the island, any areas of the island that you would just want to avoid or not go into because you feel that there may be something very dark there?
I've never come across it, and I hope I never do, but I've heard the stories of it. The rifle range is the most well-known dark entity on the island. And the other one would be at Mission Point. The one on the rifle range, originally we thought it was a soldier who was executed there back in the early 1800s. And now we're not so sure it's him, just because it's very menacing. It's one person told me about it, and he was like, oh yeah, it's this Native American spirit or god or elemental, and it's not to be messed with. Has a humanoid body, reptilian style head, and it doesn't like people coming near its home, and that's its home. And one person got a picture of it. They were on there, they took a picture, they showed it to me on their camera, digital camera. I was like, you have to email that to me. Get that. I need that picture. And I never heard from them again. So now when I see people and they have a picture, I sit with them while they're working on getting it to me. So I don't miss those pictures. That was one that was, it was exactly like, it was very misty looking figure, but it was a figure. Very human body, and it definitely had looked like either a turtle or a snake style head. And I'm not, it's not matrixing or, what's the word? I'm drawing a blank. Where you see something that's not really there and your mind plays tricks on you, make you see it. It was really actually something there on the rifle range. It wasn't in the weeds, it wasn't in the bushes, it was out three dimensions standing in the middle of the rifle range. And I was just like, wow. So that thing is known to trip people, grab hair, throw rocks. It does different things. But it happens usually you're just walking down the rifle range. I don't go on the rifle range at night just because I don't mess with the dark side of things. I know people who do that, and if I need someone to help me with something, I'll call them. I typically will deal with animals and human spirits. That's what I deal with. So not something that's beyond my knowledge base. The one at Mission Point, some people, we don't know who it is or what it is or anything like that, but I've seen it. It was actually during the filming Somewhere in Time in the soundstage at Mission Point, one of the crane operators was rushed by it and knocked off of a crane and broke two ribs and punctured a spleen when he got knocked off his crane from something that came out of a corner in the soundstage and just rushed him. Towards the well, he was on his crane seat, on the seat on his crane when they were filming. There is footage of him talking about it, or the crew talking about it in one of the DVDs. I have four of the DVDs that they've released on the movie. I think there's like 10. I haven't found the one that has it yet, and I don't know which one it is where they do talk about that instance. It's a shadow. It's definitely a shadow figure. We've done investigations in the soundstage. And it's a huge room. I mean, it's enormous. They used to play basketball, and they could put two or three basketball courts in this room. It's huge. And we saw it from while we were on one side. We saw it on the other side. There's emergency exit lights that are on when you're investigating. It's dark. And we could see it moving around near underneath where the emergency light was by a door on the other side. And we were just, there's nobody down there. In fact, one of the people we were with was brave enough to go down there, and he said, there's nobody over there. There's nobody there. What we keep seeing is not there. It's not real. It's a ghost. It's a shadow. And it was three-dimensional. It wasn't against the wall. It was moving around in our world. It was definitely not a shadow like you would cast if you were blocking light.
Not everything, though, obviously, is dark on that island. I'd almost venture to say there's more light than there is dark.
I mean, the funny thing is customers that go on our walking, we do a walking tour, too. But customers I talk to, and they say, is my hotel haunted and things like that? I go, they ask, what hotels are haunted? Let me give you the short list, the ones that aren't haunted. There's more ghost stories in hotels there's more hotels up there that have ghost stories than don't. It's a long list. There's tons of stories that I love. There's one that is kind of creepy at the Lakeview Hotel. We don't know who she is, but there's a female presence at the Lakeview, and some people said they've seen her walking down the staircase, walking through hallways. And the best, and I take this take them at their word, the best story I've ever heard of her was a married couple were in their room. They went to bed, lights were out, and the layout of the room, it's hard to explain it, but there's a bed, it's like a small room, there's a little area with a sitting table and a bathroom next to the sitting table. And they were in bed, and all of a sudden the bathroom light turned on next to the little sitting area. And they didn't understand what happened, whatever. He gets up, goes over, turns it off, goes back to bed, they go back to sleep, turns on again, goes back over, turns it off, shuts the bathroom door. Then it turned on again, the bathroom door was opened again, and the light was on, and they were both in bed, awake, and there's a woman brushing her hair on the little, vanity stand next to the bathroom, looking in the mirror, brushing her hair, and then the bathroom light went out. They couldn't see her, so they turned the light on next to the bed, and they look over there, there's nobody there, but the mirror had cracked diagonally across the mirror, and it wasn't there before. So it was a very interesting little ghost story from one of the rooms, someone who experienced them. It's creepy. It's not menacing or anything, but it's very creepy, and the fact the mirror cracked. They said they didn't hear the mirror crack, but it's either they're telling me the truth or they broke a mirror and wanted to have a reason not to have to pay for it.
A very popular location on the island is the Stone Chapel. And if you've been to the island, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Is there anything connected there to the paranormal?
No, you know what? Honestly, there's not really any stories. The director of the state park one time believed that was where they built the gallows to execute one of the soldiers at the fort who killed an officer. But there's no record of where those gallows were built. And I went through military records at the time, and it was public property. And typically back then, if they were going to execute someone, they would do it on military grounds if it's a military court-martial. So I don't think that's where it was. I think it was somewhere behind the fort or on the parade grounds in the fort. But there's no record of where it was. And we've both been looking for it and never come across where they built the gallows. That was back in the early 1800s, and two executions, and then it was gone. One of the executions was actually part of the reason Michigan doesn't have the death penalty anymore. Another historical tidbit. It was a Native American man who caught a white man raping his wife, and he killed the man, and then they executed him for murder. It was self-defense, but back then Native Americans weren't thought of highly at all. They were the savages back then, so he killed a white man, yes, from death, and he was one of the last people to be executed in the state of Michigan for a crime on Mackinac Island.
One of the most famous locations on the island, not a resort at all, it's Fort Mackinac, which you talked about a little bit earlier in the conversation, but that place itself, very, very active.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of, the fort is definitely one of the hot spots on the island. I hear stories all the time. I've had personal experiences. I've seen things happen at the fort. We've been able to investigate the fort officially two times. Unofficially, a handful of times, but we don't do it anymore because we don't want to get in trouble. We have a friend who works at the fort, and they let us in, and they let us do it until security finds out, and then we all run, you know. So, but that was years ago. I don't do that anymore. I'm legit now. I don't trespass when I investigate. I make sure I have permission. But the two official ones, the first time we ever officially investigated that fort, when we could get inside buildings, we weren't just on the ground. We went into, it's called the Officers' Hill Quarters. It was it's a house that one of the officers lived in. And we went upstairs where there's two children's bedrooms. And these two kids died while their parents were at the fort, and we were sitting in the hallway outside one of these bedrooms, and we were doing recordings, seeing if we could get anything, asking questions. We had all our meters and all our everything, all the equipment set up in this little hallway, trying to get something. And all of a sudden, the girl I'm with, Kim, she's sitting there going, something's pulling on my hair. So I put the flashlight up, and her hair on one side was physically, she had longer hair, was physically lifted up in the air like it was being tugged, and nothing was there tugging it. We were both just like, wow. And this was less than 5 minutes after we said, like, we're investigating. It was like, you don't usually get something so quick. But no one's ever investigated this place before, so maybe they were eager to make some contact. That's what we assumed. And we had a little kid giggling on our recording. It's faint, it's muffled, but you can hear a little kid giggling, and there were no kids in the entire fort area. And it's a large area anywhere. And if they would have had to been within 15 to 20 feet the way we heard them giggling. So we think it was possibly one of the kids who died in the house. Just pulling at her hair and giggling about it. That's all we really had at that one investigation, but it was well worth it. The men's bathroom inside the fort, there's only one men's and one women's bathroom in the fort that's public. The men's bathroom actually is the old mess hall where Private Brown, his name was James Brown, not the musician, not the singer, shot Corporal Flynn in the neck with a flintlock rifle while they were off duty in the mess hall. He was on guard duty. That's how he still had his gun with him. A lot of people said it was an accident. Static electricity sparked and it triggered the flintlock rifle to go off, which can happen. I've talked to people who work with those rifles and said, yeah, if you get a static shock and you get it near the gunpowder, it will go. It'll ignite it. So it is possible it was an accident. But the two people, the Private Brown and Corporal Flynn, did not like each other. It was well known that they did not like each other. And they accused him of murdering Corporal Flynn. And he's one of the ones that the gallows was built for. They tried to get a pardon. There was an attempted mutiny at the fort to free him. It went up to the President of the United States to try and get a pardon. It never came through. And they hung him. And he died. And a lot of people think he haunts not just the fort, but he's the one that originally a lot of people think haunts the rifle range. He may haunt it too. There's also that dark entity back there. But in the bathroom, men have said door stalls open on them when they're using the bathroom behind them and there's nobody there. Faucets will go on and off. And the paper towel things where they have the sensor that sets them off to have the paper towel come down, they go off constantly. And sometimes people go in there and the entire roll of paper towels is on the floor, hanging from the actual paper towel holder. So something set it off so much that all the paper towel came out. The old hospital, people have said they feel sick in there. People have smelled what they say is like rotting flesh or death in there. One person, and again, it was before I made sure to get people to give me the pictures that they've taken, got a picture of a uniformed soldier's leg in the display case that wasn't there. It was in the picture. He didn't see it with his own eyes. He was taking a picture of one of the medical areas, and he came back, saw the picture, and this was before digital cameras. And on the negative, on the camera photo, was a uniformed leg standing, just one leg, standing in the display. And he doesn't know how that could have happened.
There are far too many stories of the ghosts of Mackinac to share on one episode of this program. Down the road, we will talk again about the ghosts of Mackinac, and more specifically about some of the resorts on the island and their infamous hauntings. Be sure to subscribe to not miss any of those episodes. If you'd like to find out more about the ghosts of Mackinac Island, be sure to visit Todd's website at hauntsofmackinaw.com. Mackinaw, I should note, not the easiest of words to spell unless you know how to spell it. It's MACKINAC. Hauntsofmackinac.com. That wraps up today's episode of The Grave Talks. If you like our program, thank you. Do us one better, and please subscribe on whatever platform it is you listen to us. And also, let us know that you like the show. Give us a positive review on whatever platform it is you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you name it. We greatly appreciate that support. That helps us grow in the rankings, lets other folks find us, and lets them know that we exist. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Grave Talks.